It is time for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. He's the editor and publisher of the Timber Jay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, good to talk to you again.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's hear what's kind of the aftermath of what's been going on with the city of Tower in terms of the former clerk treasurer and how that's affecting some grant money from the state.
Right. Well, in fact, it's been one of these circumstances here over the last few weeks since the suspension of the former city clerk treasurer. I shouldn't say former. I mean, she still is a city clerk treasurer. But there have been just a whole lot of problems that have sort of come to the fore here, have been revealed. It seems like every rock you turn over, there's something unpleasant underneath. One of these situations involves a grant that the city received from the Legislative and Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources, or the LCCMR. And this was actually a really great project. It was for a trail around the city's harbor, and then that was going to connect up with about a half mile bituminous trail, bike and walking trail, that was going to connect up to the Mesabi Trail. So this was all part of, you know, creating these regional connections of trails, and it was a good project. And it was also going to include a kayak and canoeing route where people could be mapping along the East Two River that would take folks out to Lake Vermilion, and then some maps along Lake Vermilion where you'd go a little ways, and then you'd go back up a neighboring river called the West Two River. We have the East Two and the West Two River here in Tower, and it's a really nice route, lots of wildlife along there. And so, you know, it had a lot of appeal with the LCCMR, and they provided funding in two different phases of about almost $1.3 million. The first phase was supposed to be done by June 30th, and it's not quite finished at this point, but the bigger problem was that it turns out that some of the money, it appears, was redirected to things that were not actually in the grant. So the LCCMR has asked the city to suspend any work on the second phase of this project until they can review exactly what happened and how it is that some of this money got redirected. It's obviously a concern. It was possible that money could have been redirected, but the city would have had to have received authorization from the LCCMR to make, you know, any kind of a change in the grant. And apparently this was never sought, at least nothing was ever sought in writing. The city has no record of any authorization, nor does the LCCMR at this point. But they say they want to do a little bit more review with the LCCMR to determine, whether or not there might have been some kind of discussion about a possible change. But at this point, until they can get to the bottom of that discrepancy, they don't want the city to do anything more on the second phase of this project. And there were other issues as well. It turns out that the clerk treasurer apparently had made a fairly substantial error with this project. The first phase included funding of $679,000. And that was supposed to include $120,000 in engineering and project management. It turns out that when they awarded the construction bid, which came in higher than they anticipated because they included some things that weren't supposed to be in this, that actually the construction cost alone ate up the entire $679,000, leaving the city apparently on the hook for the $120,000 in engineering costs. And for the city of Tower, that's a big number. It's almost a third of the city's annual levy. There's not a lot of property value in Tower, and so this is a big number, and it was just a kind of a very unexpected and unpleasant surprise for the new city council to realize that they inherited this problem. So it remains to be seen how this is going to get worked out, how that $120,000 is going to get paid for, and whether or not the LCCMR is going to reimburse all of these expenditures. You know, they spent $679,000 on construction around for a trail now around the harbor, but we didn't end up with that half-mile paved trail that was supposed to connect to the Mesabi Trail. Instead, they installed decorative lighting and about 150 feet of floating boardwalk in the harbor. And that was not part of the original project. And so it remains to be seen whether or not the LCCMR agrees to reimburse those costs. If not, then the city would end up eating those costs as well. So this could end up being a real big boondoggle. You know, hopefully they'll be able to get it worked out. They do have, the city does now have a very capable individual who's very experienced in grant writing who is working on this project and other grants. And it turns out that these grants for a lot of various projects in town are the main reason that the city has suffered such a cash flow problem in recent months, as we've talked about. It turns out that the suspended clerk treasurer has not done a good job of keeping the funding requests coming in for these grants, so they've not been getting the reimbursements from the funding agencies on a timely basis. So this person who's now filling in, that's kind of what she's been doing mostly, is trying to write final reports and make, you know, reimbursement requests to whether it's the IRRB or the LCCMR, you know, or other agencies to make sure that we're starting to get some of this money coming in, because as of today, the city still hasn't gotten a single penny in on this LCCMR project, even though they've incurred about $800,000 in expenses altogether to date. So that's a lot of money to be fronting for a little city like Tower.
Yeah, still a lot to figure out in the aftermath. You mentioned the IRRB, though, and that kind of ties into our next story. That's pretty good news. That's with Lampa Manufacturing, their new facility. They hadn't been happy with the Tower City Council on their new facility, but things are looking up?
Yes. As we talked about before, that had kind of fallen off the rails about a few weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago now, and finally it is officially back on track. There were all the parties from the IRRB, which is funding the facility, to Lampa Manufacturing, and then representatives from the City of Tower, all met, came to an agreement, and then it's all been processed. The project is set to go now, and they have signed a new lease, and the building is mostly completed. At this point, there's just a few change orders to replace some of the equipment that the city had installed that Lampa Manufacturing had not wanted. So hopefully if all goes as planned now, Lampa Manufacturing should be able to move in there as of September 1st. And they have a 10-year lease now in place, which has been signed and approved by everybody. So we're very excited that that project is back on track, because that means a lot of jobs here in Tower.
Yeah, another story you've been covering having to do with northeastern Minnesota. That is good news, has to do with Zups, the grocery store in Cook that was lost to a fire, but there's going to be a temporary site.
Yes, there is. Sort of a good news, bad news story. The reason that Zups is opening a temporary store is partly because it turns out that the reconstruction of a new store is going to be delayed. It's been delayed because of, it turns out that the costs for construction are very high right now, and that has really pushed the price of building a new store there up far beyond what they had anticipated. And so it looks like they're probably going to scale back the footprint a little bit of the new store, and they're still looking for financing at this point. But in the meantime, they announced this week that they are going to be opening up a temporary facility. This will be enabling the gas station, because they had a gas station, actually, that was part of the store. They also did sell gas there, and they'll be able to reopen those pumps here quite soon and have a place people can pay or whatever if they need to. And then they're also opening a temporary grocery store, which will primarily have produce and meats, and Zups, of course, is well known for the quality of its meats. So that's been something that folks have certainly been missing in Cook. And of course, Zups was the only grocery store in Cook, so not having any grocery in a town of 600, that's a major inconvenience, and especially because it's 20 miles to the nearest even a small grocery store. So you know, folks are very excited to have at least something back, although it'll still be a few weeks yet, but they are renting some space that's available right now that was near their former store, and hopefully they'll get that up here before the summer's over.
Before we go, Marshall, this is a miracle of a story that you have to tell us now about a young man, a 17-year-old, that walked away from an Outward Bound group. Tell us the story.
This is definitely a strange one here. We had a 17-year-old male who walked away from his Outward Bound group that had been camped on the U.S. side of Basswood Lake, and this was on the 4th of July. Early morning, they found out this kid didn't emerge from his tent, and they realized he was gone. And the group spent several hours searching for him, you know, in the vicinity of their camp, and then finally called, you know, authorities to come in and help. And they haven't released the name of this young man. I understand he's from Nebraska. But anyway, they really had no idea where he had gone, and eventually after a day of searching, and of course this involves lots of people, you know, you have the St. Louis County Rescue Squad, you have the Lake County Sheriff's Office, you had Customs and Border Patrol, you had the U.S. Forest Service, the Minnesota State Patrol, you had Canadian authorities, because this was up near the border, and, you know, so there was a huge number of people involved. There were planes, helicopters. I mean, they were doing everything they could. You know, this kid didn't have a canoe. He didn't have a tent with him. He had brought a life vest, apparently, with him. I don't know. He must have had some food, and he had a map and a compass. And after about a day of searching with no success, no sign even of this kid, one of the fellow campers had indicated that that this kid had told him that he was going to try to walk to Canada, to a lake that's north of Basswood Lake in the Quetico. What his purpose for going to this lake was, it wasn't clear, but it changed the search, obviously, substantially. They had been looking on the U.S. side, and part of the problem with getting over to the Canadian side from where they were is they had to cross the Basswood River, which is a pretty substantial river. But apparently he made it across and ended up on a small island in Basswood Lake. And that is probably the only reason they ever found this kid. Because by this time, the U.S. searchers, once they realized that he had probably gone into Canada, they eventually suspended their search. And this was on the second day. And left it to the Canadian authorities, and they were able to find this kid from the air using infrared. And they found a heat signature on a little island, and they figured it was too small of an island to, you know, be harboring a moose or a bear or something like that. So they thought, well, maybe this is this kid. And they landed nearby, pulled out a megaphone, yelled his name, and the head pops up out of the brush. And it turns out it's this kid. And you know, and had they not found him, had he not been on that little island but had been out, you know, further in the woods somewhere, you would have never found somebody, you know, in a wilderness like that. You know, even millions of acres of dense forest. And, you know, a heat signature, you know, was only really useful in that particular unusual location on that small island. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of wild animals that are giving off heat signatures out there in the woods. Could certainly be mistaken for, you know, human. So, you know, this really was looking for a needle in a haystack, and it turns out that they got a lucky break, and it's probably saved this kid's life, because I don't know how long he would have survived out there. You know, no tent, no canoe. That had to have been pretty difficult those 2 days, I would imagine. I can imagine the nights were pretty uncomfortable with all the mosquitoes and everything else out there.
Wow.
So, but the Canadian authorities and apprehended him and, you know, brought him to Fort Frances, where apparently he was handed over to his parents, who probably were not real happy.
No.
And, you know, I guess he won't face any charges. At least there was no word of that, even though he did illegally cross into Canada. So at this point, that's about all we were able to find out. But it was definitely an interesting tale, that's for sure.
Yeah, and a reminder, all the work that lots of volunteer folks do, the St. Louis County Rescue Squad and you know, the people that look for folks. I mean, it's pretty amazing the systems that are set up to make this miracle happen and get the kid out.
And I have to say to the rescue squad, they are amazing because those guys are volunteers. And when they go on something like this, they might be out there in the bush for, you know, 2 days, sometimes 3 days on these searches. And they're, you know, long, long hours. I mean, the two nights they were out there, they slept on the ground. Mm. They didn't have tents either.
Right.
You know, they had rain gear and head nets, and that's what kept them from kept the bugs away, and that was it. You know, so they're out in some of the worst conditions sometimes that you can imagine. So you really got to tip your hat to the folks on that rescue squad.
Absolutely,
I'm always amazed at what they do.
Absolutely. This has been the Border News Roundup with Marshall Helmberger. You can read and see more at thetimberjay.com, including how you can subscribe to the newspaper. Marshall, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.